You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome everyone to a special episode of the 602 Club, another supplemental here, and I'm really excited tonight. John, hey, how's it going, man?
Well, I'm the reason you're excited, Matt. Let's face it. Every time that I come in, Ruby opens up that top shelf liquor and we have something special and magical happen.
That is so true, John. That is so true. I'm glad Ruby's here too, because otherwise that would just sound weird.
Yes, it would. It really would, wouldn't it? But it's always such a good time. I'm always very appreciative when you have me in. And I think that today is actually going to be, this is one of those really super special episodes, I think.
No, I agree with you. I am very excited about tonight. We have Christy Golding with us, and she is going to be with us to talk about her book, Dark Disciple, that we both really loved. And I cannot wait to just kind of dive in like we do on Literary Treks with an author and find out about her process. And this will be exciting because it'll be the first time that I'm getting to talk to a Star Wars author about a Star Wars book. I've talked to John Jackson Miller, but it's been about his Star Trek work. It's not been about Kenobi or Knight Errant or anything, which is always stinks because I'm like, I just kind of want to talk about Star Wars with you as well. So this will be a lot of fun.
I think so. I think so. I have a feeling we're going to learn something special tonight.
I think so, too. Well, before we go, of course, wanted to remind everybody, the 602 Club is part of Trek FM, which is an amazing place for a Star Trek podcast, as well as everything else that we do here on the 602. You can find the shows at itunes.com/Trek FM. We have 20 different shows on the network talking about all the series of Star Trek, behind the scenes of Star Trek, creators of Star Trek. We've got, different perspectives, books and comics, and everything in between, plus, of course, everything we do here in the 602 Club, and I hope you'll check us out. We're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. We've got the MP3 file on the website at trek.fm, and you can also get the RSS link there as well, so you can pop that into any podcatcher that you've got and get the shows any way you want to listen. I hope you will check us out at trek.fm and all the different podcasts, and of course on iTunes, where we're a featured provider at itunes.com/trek FM. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, there's a few ways you can do that. We've got the website at trek.fm, and you could go to trek.fm/contact, send us a message here on the 602 Club about anything that's on your mind show-wise or things you'd like to see us do. We're on Twitter at Trek FM, at Facebook at facebook.com/Trek FM. And of course, we've got the Babel Conference, which is our listeners-only discussion group. We'd love to have you there. We have some of the best conversations ever, and it is a private group for only the listeners. So only you listening to this episode right now know about this group, and it creates great conversation. John and I are there every day having a fun time, and I hope you'll join us. Just type Babel into the search field on Facebook. You can go to the website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar, and we look forward to seeing you there. Well, John, I think it's time to grab something good to drink and head into the 602 and talk to Christy.
After you, good sir.
Well, John, I cannot contain my excitement tonight. I'm really glad that, one, Star Wars has given us so much to talk about recently in the 602, and we both covered the Dark Disciple Clone Wars novel that came out that gave us, I think, one of the best Clone Wars stories we've ever had.
Absolutely.
And,
yes.
Yeah. And as you all can hear, we have author Christy Golding with us tonight to talk about her book, Dark Disciple. Hi, Christy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited. So,
just really want to underline how excited we are because just our, we know that the book has been very well received in general, but we, I went through, I know that both of us went through the book so fast because we just couldn't put it down. It's and we're really looking forward to talking to you about how it came to be.
Well, Christy, everybody kind of has a Star Wars story of how they found the saga and, you know, kind of what made them a fan and stay with it. For you, when did you first find Star Wars? And then what kind of kept you coming back for more?
Well, I was one of the originals. I was 13 years old when the summer of 1977 hit. And I found it along with the rest of the world in May. And it was truly something that changed my life. I had a penchant for getting into things very intensely when I was younger and still do to a certain extent. And I have my parents to thank because even though they were not big science fiction fans and had no idea what I loved about this so much, that summer they dropped me off at the movie theater every Saturday and every Sunday, right when the first showing was, and then they would come pick me up for dinner, and then I'd go back on Sunday and I'd do the same thing. And so that was how I spent my summer in 1977, was in a nice, cool, dark theater. So it was really just amazing to me. And Empire did not disappoint, and Jedi was amazing. And then there was a lull, and then we got more Star Wars, and now we're about to get even more Star Wars with the big three, which is honestly, I never thought I'd see that. I really didn't think that was ever going to happen. I thought that the time for that had come and gone, and I just had resigned myself to not seeing it. So I am hugely excited.
Excellent. Yeah, that's hearing you tell your story. It's kind of I'm a little bit younger, but yeah, the movie theater experience back then is so different than the movie theater experience now. And it's so much fun to think back at everything that's changed since then and how Star Wars itself reflects it.
Absolutely. It's never gone away. It's always been there.
It does. It is one of those things that just feels like there was never a time before Star Wars. And that doesn't happen with very many franchises, but Star Wars is one of those elite few where you're just like, was there ever a time? But do we just tell time these days, you know, BSW before Star Wars?
Yeah. Well, I certainly do.
Well, for you, having, you know, seen both, do you have a favorite character from the original trilogy, and then maybe a character, favorite character from the prequel trilogy?
Oh, I have to say, I imprinted quite early on Luke Skywalker. That scene, it was so beautiful with the music swelling, where he's standing looking out as the suns are setting on Tatooine. I literally do have a very concrete memory of seeing that scene for the first time, and I can tell you where I was in the movie theater. It was just that profound. So definitely, I've always been a Luke girl, and in the prequels, I have to say I really got to know Ben. We all got to know him. We only briefly saw him, of course, as an old man, as the wise old mentor. And I thought Ewan McGregor, who is a tremendous actor, did such a wonderful job taking him and aging him through those three movies.
Well, I think you've just cemented yourself as one of my favorite people, because that's kind of where I fell, too. You know, when I was a kid, Luke was my favorite. And then as I grew up, Obi-Wan kind of became the one that I really liked. And then, of course, the prequels just blew the lid off of loving Obi-Wan because there was so much more to love. So, yeah, wow, that's really, really cool. I love kind of figuring out where people, what characters stood out to them, because that's one of the best things about Star Wars. There's so many different characters, and people love them for the strangest reasons. You know, even, you know, characters that seem like, oh, you love a droid, but, well, we all know why we all love R2-D2, because he has some of the most personality in the entire series.
He does. Both of the droids are absolutely wonderful. It's amazing how endearing they are.
Well, for you, I know that this was the first time to be through the Clone Wars. And you're no stranger to Star Wars literature. You've written the Legends line. You did the Fate of the Jedi series, and I really enjoyed your work there. I liked that series a lot, and I kind of wanted to know for you, because you're new to Clone Wars, what it was like digging into that series, and then, of course, writing in the new canon as opposed to, you know, what you did with the Legends line.
Well, it was actually easier to do this simply because I think that doing the Fate of the Jedi series will probably continue to be at the top of the most challenging things that I've ever done, to come into a series and do three of the nine books, but only the middle books. You never get to kick it off and you never get to wrap it up. And to try and learn a history of, you know, that's 40 years in the making with so many characters in the EU to keep track of. It was really quite daunting. So for the Clone Wars, it was kind of easy. It was all in one handy dandy place. You just kind of sit down and you turn on your Netflix and you just settle back with a drink and you watch. And I really enjoyed doing that. I had been told that the show was good, and it certainly was. And I got very, very fond of it. And by the end, I was in kind of a bleak place, because we all know where this all goes. And I really thought the whole story of the clones, and I loved and I hated that they made so many memorable individuals in the clones, because it was just, it was so tragic, just so unspeakably tragic. What their whole lives, you know, why they were made, how they were made, what they were made for, and what they would eventually become. And yet they didn't know this, and they were just themselves. So I thought that was very powerful and tragic. And I really, really enjoyed it. And of course, I was there mainly to learn about Ventress, and what a joy that was to get to see the episodes that highlighted her. Some really, really wonderful stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of that, though, in terms of looking at, you know, the series through the lens of Ventress, was there, did that color how you saw the other episodes as well? And was there something about her origin with the Night Sisters that you found maybe an avenue because of other works you had done? Was there an in with her that you were able to find through the rewatch?
I loved the whole Night Sisters idea, the whole concept of them, and the stories that involved them were extremely powerful and very moving. And I knew that the scripts addressed it, and I knew that we were going to go back to Dathomir at part of the book. And I'm not going to give spoilers, because I don't know if this is spoiler free or not, but
spoilers,
this is okay spoiler territory.
It is okay.
Yeah, we're gonna make this a spoiler podcast, that way okay. You can talk as much as you'd like about your
as
process.
Freely as you would like. Everybody knows that we don't like to restrain anybody.
Okay, well, Rosebud is a sled. There we go. Now that we've got that out of the way. but seriously, so I knew by reading, I'd read the scripts. I had eight scripts, and I had four animatic versions of the first four scripts. And then I first saw all the ones with her, and then I sat down and I watched all of it so that I could put her in context in her world. Now that I had a little bit better grasp of her personality, I just sat and I just watched straight through. And so, yes, I was always looking to see, oh, that's a great line. You know, that tells me something about this character that she's going to interact with. I'll remember that. So I was looking at it from a research purpose, but it really got a little hard because I just enjoyed it so much. And there were actually times that I'm like, oh crap, I need to go back. So I wasn't paying attention to what the listening post looked like. I was too busy enjoying the episode, you know, as a, for instance.
Sure.
So yeah, it was good enough that it got me sidetracked and I did have to go back and watch a few things.
What were some of the other things? Just kind of getting to sit down and watch this for the first time and being able to watch it all together. What are some of the other things just about the Clone Wars and the series that stood out to you that you ended up enjoying in a way that you thought you didn't even know you could?
I thought it was, and I hope I don't massacre his name, Matt Lanter was
yes,
the voice
Matt Lanter.
Of Anakin. And I just mm-hmm. thought he did an amazing job. I really loved Anakin by the time it was all done. And that one episode
Definitely.
Where he starts to really start the slide down when he meets Tarkin. And that moment
oh,
where
yeah,
they shake
the
hands
mm-hmm.
and that gloved hand, because of course Anakin's wearing his gloves, that gloved hand and the faint music of the, you know, the Imperial March in the background. I was just like, oh, I got chills.
Yeah.
And it's like watching a train wreck, you know it's coming, you know where he's going to end up. And when he got cruel to Padme at the end and said such harsh things, and I was just like, no, this could all be avoided. We don't have to go there. But of course we do. And so that was a bit hard. But gosh, there's just so much. The clones, I didn't expect to really like them so much. Fives just broke my heart.
Yeah.
I always liked him. And there were so many wonderful things. There were a lot of smaller characters, and again, we got to see so much more of Obi-Wan, and he really became, in the latter part of the book, he was a focal character because we were not getting into Voss's head, because we didn't want to tip off the reader as to what might or might not be happening. And so most of the reactions that weren't for Ventress's point of view had to be from Obi-Wan's. And so I really got to know him better and to just kind of sit with him. And there's a speech at the very end, which really
favorite.
Just kind of came out in one sitting, just out of how upset I was. Because I go along for the ride as well as my readers. And just really summed up, I hope, how Kenobi was feeling about this and how broken he was.
You did capture that. Absolutely. Like Matt and I have cited that speech in specific previously. Like you did really capture it. It's really a wonderful, wonderful moment in the book. But And there's one question that I hate to ask, but I feel obliged to ask because this is sort of an ongoing debate about the Clone Wars. Did you watch it in the order that the episodes aired, or did you watch it linearly? Did they give you a chronological order?
I did not get a chronological order, so I watched them. But bear in mind, I started watching just the Ventress episodes completely out of context, and then I went back. So I did it in a third and different way.
Cool.
More different S.
Yeah, I think that's a cool idea, though, to go through, you know, if you've seen the series before, go through and pick out those specific episodes for your favorite character and watch it that way almost and really get a sense of, okay, what does the show say about your character? That's really cool. I'm going to have to do that.
I'm going to do that with Fives. You mentioned Fives earlier.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
do that with Fives.
Yeah, and then you see their arc. You know, with the show as a background, not as, you know, the centerpiece.
What were some of the things you talked of specifically about writing Obi-Wan there? And one of the things that John and I picked up on was the interesting way that you put Obi-Wan and Yoda kind of on one side and the rest of the council and Anakin on the other. And that was a really interesting thing to see how these two characters are drifting one way and the rest of the characters are drifting the other way on the council and just Jedi in general. Was that something that you kind of saw in the scripts, or is that something, especially with that speech and with Yoda and Obi-Wan, that you were able to kind of dive into more?
It was present in the scripts, but not to that extent. There were a couple of times, and this was something that I spoke with my editor and with Jennifer Heddle and a story group about, there, we felt we needed to have, as you say, almost two sides, because we were seeing in the scripts sometimes there were some zingers that Obi-Wan was saying, and that just didn't feel right to me with where I had taken the character. I didn't feel that this character, as he was developing, would say something nasty to Ventress. You know, I just, that wasn't with the flow that the book was going. And a book has to find its own voice separate from the source material. Just like a movie is different from an adaptation of a book. It's, you've got to have the movie story and the movie feel. And you have to do the same when you have a script. You have to flesh it out and make it become appropriate and feel a good fit for the new medium. And so that was something that happened, and it really became kind of clear that we did have these two sides. So we put Yoda and Kenobi a little bit more than they were on the script on this side. And there were some extra scenes that we needed to have. And so there were some more conversations that took place between those two and their misgivings. And I tried to have Yoda be in the middle, because he has authorized this mission. He's already done it. You know, so I couldn't have him saying, gosh, you're right, this really was a stupid thing to do, we shouldn't be doing this, because he's authorized it. He's got to have at least some feeling that this needs to happen. But for him, I think it wasn't, for him, the point of it wasn't to kill Dooku. The point of it was the growth that happened because of the event. And that just really, like, he was getting, you know, this feeling, this is why we need to bring Ventress in. That makes sense. And this is why this needs to happen. And in motion, events are. And so I think he knew that there was a bigger end game. There was a bigger lesson here than just the death of a single man.
That is, yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting things is reading the book. I was really struck by your characterization of Obi-Wan and him being my favorite character. I loved in some ways that somebody says to him, you know, you always take the high road. And that's always how I think of him, is being High Road Kenobi. Mm-hmm. And I love that it played so organically into the story, though, to see the way that the Jedi Council, I think, is being fractured and pulled into a moral quagmire that they're only, it seems like at this point, totally realizing that they're not where they want to be at all. And I really liked the way that this seems very relevant to our world. And you know, that good intentions, you know, that it's fine, but it can lead you, you know, to hell if you're not, you know, doing it the right way. And so I just really, really liked the way that you were able to weave all of that in. And, you know, I think Star Wars, as with anything, it really means the most when it's almost showing us something about ourselves.
Well, as I'm sure you all know, the original Star Wars was fashioned after Joseph Campbell's work with The Hero's Journey.
Yes, yes.
Which is a deep examination of the subconscious mythos that we find, and we seem compelled to keep telling the story again and again and again and again, because I think it's part of what it means to be human, and it's hardwired into our brains. So that doesn't surprise me at all. And I too like the episodes that really do border on the mythic and the magical, and also not just mythic out there as in the wonders of the forest, but the mythic of what it means to be human, whether or not that's your actual species.
Yeah. Especially in Star Wars.
Yeah. Important distinction. Yeah. I do want to say, though, that I think that you truly excelled bringing Windu to life, too, because I think that if there's a character that does, you know, singularly personify the Jedi's slide toward, you know, toward a bad fate, it's him. And I think that you really, you did an excellent job of making him, I guess you would say, relatably damnable. because he comes across to me, and I wonder if you drew for, did you draw from any characters that you knew or had seen elsewhere? Because for me, he has very much a Jack Nicholson sort of feel from A Few Good Men, where he's, you know, you need me on that wall. And like, that's the feeling I got from Windu. Was there any purposeful allusion to an historical character like that?
No, not intentionally. It was, a lot of it was there in the scripts. And for me, my challenge was making him the voice to push in this direction and to be tough and to be hard about it, but still be a Jedi while doing it. And, you know, for, and that's one of the reasons the scripts picked up with Voss walking into the council chamber and getting his assignment. So the whole scene with the Moran, the whole little fun bit with him and Desh to introduce his character, those were my works. And I wanted to do that. I wanted us to open with something terrible. And remember, I'm getting these scripts isolated from anything that went before or after them. I don't know. So it could well be that a previous episode had something really horrible that made the Jedi. But just to start with those scripts, I was like, that's a big jump. We need to feel as the readers why this is being put on the table. And so that's why the opening sequence has such a high body count and why it's so calculated and why Dooku is doing it, because he knows the council is going to see it. And hopefully by the time you've read that, you're feeling as gut punched as the council is. And this argument, which makes sense in the end, we do all have to agree that this makes sense. Everything leads back to this man. Once he is gone, chaos will erupt. This could save millions, not thousands, but millions of lives. We've just watched, what, 10, 20,000 go up 5 minutes before? And so we really needed to have something to make his argument seem like the right thing to do. And that was a challenge because it is not very Jedi-like, but I wanted to do something that would make the reader go, yeah, you know, if we could stop him, that really would be good.
Well, and what's so great, I mean, to quote, obviously, the other franchise with Spock, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And so the fact that this event leads the Jedi to say, okay, it would be better if we just killed one guy and finally ended this so that we could save millions. And yeah, that rationale, it's almost impossible to argue with.
It's seductive like the dark side.
Mm-hmm. Because it seems like it's the right thing to do. Yeah. And, you know, who knows? Maybe it is the right thing to do, but it's not the right thing for Jedi to do.
Well, and it was so interesting watching Voss's slide, because this whole idea from Ventress, you needed to fight fire with fire. That's what she was saying. And in the end, what we see, I loved throughout the book, is that by the end, we watch that, no, it's actually the light side. It's the very personification of the light side, which is love, true sacrificial love, that wins the day, you know? And I loved that whole lesson that the Jedi are having to learn, unfortunately, at this point. No, you can't fight dark side with dark side. Because that's not what wins the day.
Yeah, certainly. You know, actually, that sort of feels a little bit like, I believe it was Martin Luther King said, you can't drive out darkness with darkness, only light can do that.
I was so, just thinking that. Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, given the fact that so many of these characters are going sort of through a personal arc, and we've talked about how, you know, you researched, what pieces of you are there in this story? We know that you crafted certain parts of the story from the script and you expanded on certain things, but were there any life experiences or personal events that you used to inform somebody's journey or something, you know, in exchange or conversation that stuck with you through time and this was your chance to express it?
Well, the one thing, you know, I try, especially in media work and especially in novelizations, I try to be invisible. I try for the reader to forget that they are reading, instead feel so immersed in the story that they're not, you know, saying, wow, that was an interesting point that author Christy Golden raised, or, you know, I want them to be present. But I will tell you that a lesson that I have learned is that anytime you stray too far from who you are and what you feel is right, you're going to get in trouble. And I think that this story was a perfect, it already had that in it. And that was just a theme that I kind of ran with a little bit and was able to get full flower with Kenobi in the second part of the book. You know, the still small voice, this is wrong. And just this knowing that this just is not the way. This is not the way, not for Jedi. And all of the stuff went from that when Ventress, you know, wanted to be close to Voss and to tell him about his master and didn't, you know, that was wrong. When you have the opportunity to be true, to move, if you have the choice to move closer to who you truly are and you move away from it, that's bad.
Were there any parts where you were, when you were developing it and, you know, somebody would review, were there any parts that they pushed back on? Was there anything where they said something was too far or that you had to soften?
Oh, I hate to get into stuff like that. It sounds like telling tales
enough.
Out of school,
sure.
But I will say there were some. I mean, there always are. There's also areas where they want me to do more. It's always a back and forth. When you're writing a tie-in, you're not writing just to please yourself. You are writing to please the owners of the IP. You're writing to please the fans who already know these characters and who have certain expectations that they want to meet. So there's always a little bit of, well, what about? No. Well, then what about that? Okay. And what about this? That sounds great. But what about the other? No, not so much. It's just a negotiation on some things. But I'm very fortunate in that with here and in with my Warcraft work, I work with editors who trust me and who trust my instincts. So most of the times, if I had something and they were a little leery about it, I'd say, let me do it. I'll take it out. I'll change it. You know, I will. Just see how it works in the book. And most of the time, they're usually pretty happy with how I've managed to do something.
What were some of your favorite things about getting to write this story and getting to work in the Clone Wars era? And then maybe what were some of the hardest for you to kind of get your hands around and really make it work the best it could?
The best thing about this book was really getting to hang out with Ventress and Voss, because they're such great characters. And I loved the, I won't say filler because that sounds negative, but I will say expanded scenes that I got to write. Most of them were earlier in the book as we got to know them. And so just hanging out with them and their banter back and forth in that play, and you have two very sharp wits engaged with each other, and two very mistrustful people who are learning to trust, who are learning to take that step. I really, truly enjoyed that. I so enjoyed that interaction between the two. Negative, what was hard about it? I guess it is hard to expand, because you don't ever want to drift too far away from the skeleton. It's like you get the script as a skeleton and you have to put the muscle and the flesh and the sinew and the skin on it, but you don't want to put too much, because then that starts distorting the shape. And so it's always hard to know what is necessary and what isn't. And there was actually something that I know a lot of people were sad that they didn't get to see in the book, which was shown as Celebration, there's a scene that they showed from the animatics of Boba Fett and company actually capturing Dooku. Yeah. And it's this great action scene, and it's fun, and you see each of the bounty hunters using their own tactics, and it was great. But and when I got there, I was like, this is not where our attention is. That's fun for a show that has to have an action scene somewhere in the middle of those 22 minutes. But as a story, this is a crux. This is a pivotal scene. And to cut away to a fun, oh my gosh, hey, these guys got Dooku and it's a great action scene, to me, would have diluted the intensity of Ventress and Vost engaged in a life and death battle and he's turned Sith. And I didn't think we should. And I know a lot of people have seen that and are like, oh, but I think if that's 2020 hindsight. I think if they had actually read that and I put it in there, I think that it would have impacted the power of that scene. So it's all those little calls that you have to make.
One of the things that had to be the most interesting for you was the fact that, you know, you got to watch through the Clone Wars and there are some amazing, and Ventress has one of the best arcs in the show. I mean, hands down, she and I think Ahsoka kind of steal the, for me, the arcs that they're in. And where their character goes from beginning to end is pretty fantastic. But Vos, on the other hand, only has one episode that he's in.
Yep.
Talk about, and he's huge in the expanded universe. Talk about writing that character and making him feel like he's as deep as, you know, Ventress when, you know, for you, when you're just watching the Clone Wars, well, we've got one episode, and he's a little bit like Jimmy Buffett in Star Wars.
The dude abides.
That's right.
the dude.
You know, it's less of a challenge for me than it might seem, because I'm not coming at this as just a viewer. I'm coming this as somebody who routinely pulls characters out of thin air and makes them hopefully, you know, memorable and funny and poignant and powerful. This is what I do. I get to make up characters. And with Vos, I had a lot of room to do that. I did have the 8 scripts and I kept my attention on that. I chose not to go and research the comics, because this was the new canon, and I was like, let's keep everything in this tidy little basket that they have given me. Because I know, and you can tell, that they were already looking to the comics for parts of his character. They weren't doing it completely slavishly, but they were pulling bits and pieces. So that's what I wanted to focus on. I didn't want to kind of clutter my interpretation of him with that. I wanted to find first what was there and then build on that. If he's like this, then he'll probably be like this in this situation and like that in that situation. And so I did get to hear his voice, which was great. I did get to see him move, which was wonderful. And that's enough for me. And knowing where he was going, and when you know where someone's going and you know what type of person they are, hopefully, as a writer, you can get them there in a way that the reader will happily go along with you.
Yeah, I think you definitely succeeded, because I was never, you know, speaking for myself, I was never the world's biggest Vos fan until I read this. Like this, in this, he became the character that I, you know, he's a wonderful character now to me, and just, you know, thrillingly characterized. So, you know, stepping away from, you know, the comics gave you room to breathe. But, you know, in terms of that, were there still any, you know, considering you are working in the new canon, were there any areas that they defined the basket where, you know, maybe some elements came in and they said you can't, because when they were working in the old expanded universe back in the the old days back in the 90s, you know, there were story elements where they said somebody would wind up straying onto paths and stuff like that. Were there any things when you were developing it that you accidentally stuck your toe over the line?
I don't recall. You know, and admittedly, my basket was pretty well defined because it was a novelization of already existing material. It wasn't just me coming up with an idea. I think the only thing that might have qualified for that was I did decide to have a Pentoran who had no tattoos, but that didn't even happen until the short story later. So that's really, really the only thing that I can think of. But I've done this enough to kind of suss out where all the walls are and where the doors are and go, okay, now I know this room. And I don't really feel the need too much to go beyond it, although I did get to create an entirely new race, and that makes me really happy.
Yeah, and it was pretty cool. The stinger was pretty awesome. I thought that was a really neat, like when he brought that out, and that, you know, just that, because we are in spoiler welcome territory, that when it came out and you knew that it was, that basically it was over for him, that was just, that was a really tough scene to read. I can imagine that writing his fate was probably pretty tough to write.
I got very fond of him. I got very fond of the Moran in general, you know, you need to have it in your head. We didn't actually see that much, but I had to have naming conventions. I had to have societal castes, as it were. I had to have paths. It wasn't as rigid as a caste. I had to have this culture. I had to have, you know, what kind of a culture would it be when, based upon the flick of a wrist, you are basically declaring murder and committing suicide? You know, what does that do to a people? So all of these things, and it's just there, you know, not very much of the book, but it was fun to create. So who knows? Maybe we'll see one somewhere going forward. You never know.
For you with this story, you know, this is a Jedi love story in a lot of ways. And the only kind of Jedi love stories we've seen so far are Anakin and Padme. And then we've seen Obi-Wan, of course, at this point, deal with the idea of love with Satine. Talk about just kind of having to create that romance between Voss and Ventress and making it feel real so that, you know, by the end when we're wiping our eyes because we've got something in them, there's a little speck, I guess it's, yeah, that, you know, you feel that weight, especially at the end. And I guess part of that question too is, was Ventress always going to die at the end?
Ventress was always going to die at the end. There was some conversation early on about what was up for grabs to make the book a better book and what was kind of set in stone that we didn't want to violate. And that came up because I desperately wanted her and Voss to run away together because that's just how I roll. But I really think it would have been a lesser book. I think that so many of her lessons and all that she had done and all that she had learned and all that he had gone through would have been cheapened had it ended in any other way. And so it was hard. And there's a quote by Robert Frost that says, "No tears in the writer, no tears in the reader." So if you guys have tears, well, guess what that means for me. But yes, that was something that was there in the original scripts and something that we did decide to do and to do with as much respect and certainty that it was the right thing to do.
Well, the way that you had it too, to give it this, it's not, I don't want to use the word redemptive because it doesn't feel right, but the fact that through her was this feeling of rebirth, of a future possible for, you know, some, you know, far in the future, Night Sisters to come back. Like there was this feeling of her death was not just not in vain in terms of the story, but her death even possibly served a higher purpose for others down the road.
Well, I think there were hints in the original script that, and this goes back to the thing we were saying about Yoda, that the Force was at work through this whole story arc. And I think we can't necessarily say what the Force was trying to do. I think some of it we discussed, some of the light that was supposed to have been shone on things we discussed with Kenobi, and who knows? I do think that this felt right. And what I always envisioned, and I did not want to go into details because I wanted this to be something that the reader got to do for him or herself at that juncture, was when she basically has a gift from the Force and time just freezes for a second and she's able to see everything. She's able to see, I think I said, every turn of every path from every second, and to understand and make her choice from this place of absolute knowledge, and that it was the right thing to do. Now, I have my feelings about what I thought she saw and why, but I didn't want to take anything away from the reader at that point.
Excellent.
And like so much of Star Wars, it gives us the opportunity that we like to do ad nauseum as fans, is to debate, oh man, what did she see? What didn't she see? You know, and I think that that's what creates such successful stories in the Star Wars realm, and just in general, is leaving enough to the imagination of the reader to be able to think what happens next. So you got the opportunity to work now in the Clone Wars era with Dark Disciple, and was just kind of wondering, is that an era that you'd like to be able to return and write more stories in? And then is there any kind of wish, if you could write any Star Wars book in any time period with the new canon, where would you like to go?
Well, you know, I got to meet Chuck Wendig at Comic-Con, and he's a super nice guy, and I really, really like him a lot, which is good, because otherwise I would hate his guts, because he has gotten, as far as I am concerned, the coolest of all the pretties that are out there, the chance to pick up. Which, by the way, I did, thank you very much, when I was 15 in my notebook, but I am a bit jelly. so yeah, I would love to do that. I would love to write perhaps, where Heir to the Jedi was, you know, 'cause I'm a Luke girl. I would love to write Luke Skywalker. But I did certainly enjoy the Clone Wars, and I feel like I know a lot of those characters so much better now. And I would not mind returning to that era either. So,
well, Christy, I loved, and I know John did too, having you here tonight to talk.
Yeah. Thank you,
Dark Disciple. And before we go, as we do anytime we have somebody on, let everybody know, one, where they can find you online, and then two, what of yours, since you're an author, do you have coming out or that you've written that you'd like people to know about, so they kind of can get an opportunity to find more of Christy Golden's works?
Oh, I appreciate that. I am easily found on Twitter at Christy Golden, capital C, capital G. I'm on Facebook, Christy Golden. And to add a little variety, my webpage is christygolden.com. I figure let's keep it simple for people to find me.
Very straightforward.
Most recently, what I'm working on right now is I'm doing a prequel to the Warcraft movie that's going to be coming out next summer. And I'm very excited about that.
Awesome.
And I have, as you mentioned, I have the works in Fate of the Jedi in the Legends era now. And I also have my most recent Warcraft book is called War Crimes. And that was pretty cool because it is the trial of one of the major characters from the game. And we have a war crime trial. And I don't think that's been done in gaming fantasy fiction before. So... pretty fun thing to try and do.
Oh, cool. That sounds awesome.
thank you so much for being with us, and I really appreciate it. And of course, you are welcome back anytime you just want to talk some Star Wars with us or anything else.
Aw, thanks, guys.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I think that I like Dark Disciple even more now. I think I'm going to accelerate its return to my rereading queue. That was what a pleasant person, and how much fun learning about her process. That was really cool, man.
You know, one of the things that I love about Dark Disciple, John, is the fact that I read it, and you know, we got the advanced reader's copy, but it was so good. I was like, this has to be on my shelf, and mm-hmm. I have to be able to pull it off the shelf now and reread it. And there's a couple of books in the new canon that are going to go along with it. But Christy really, I think, cemented herself that she deserved to be on the shelf next to, say, Revenge of the Sith's novelization by Matthew Stover. I mean, that's the pinnacle, I think, of Star Wars writing, and this just it deserves to be beside that.
You know what? Actually, keying on the idea, like one of the things we were talking about looking at a series through an unexpected character or focusing on a certain thing, I would actually be really interested to do a reread of Dark Disciple and then immediately after the novelization of Episode 3, just for the love story contrasts about the different way that Anakin and Padme approach their relationship versus the total trust and abandonment that Voss and Ventress give to each other. I think that'd be cool.
I think you've just hit on something. I want to then add to that, before I read Dark Disciple, I want to watch the Obi-Wan and Satine episodes and
Ooh.
The way they handle their relationship.
Oh, man.
Then watch Voss and Ventress as reading Dark Disciple, and then, you know, watch and or read Episode 3 with the way that, you know, Anakin and Padme, because those are the real, like, big relationships throughout Star Wars. I mean, yes, Han and Leia, but, you know, they're not two Jedi, you know, and Leia's not a Jedi at that point. So there's no issue there. But yeah, I think that would be fantastic.
Oh, I like your addition there. I think that, there's not much time left in summer. Better get cracking on that. Maybe that's my fall assignment.
Well, unfortunately, my fall assignment is going to be all the books I have to do for Literary Treks, all the books we're going to be doing for the 602 Club because of Star Wars books coming back with Aftermath and Lost Stars, and then those three kids' novels I think we're going to end up talking about, John. We've got too much work ahead of us.
But you know what? It's important to love your work, Matt. And I'd say right now we love our work.
Yeah, we do. Oh, man. Well, guys, before we go, wanted to remind all of you that we are doing the iTunes review contest right now, which is going on, which means that if you review us and rate us on iTunes, you can be entered to win a $50 gift card from Amazon.com, as well as the USS Vengeance from Eagle Moss. That's going to be Norman Lau providing that. And of course, that is the oversized USS Vengeance. So I hope everybody will go ahead and make their way over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and review. I do want to say thank you to all of you who have already done that. Everybody who has ever reviewed is going to be in this drawing, so don't worry. If you've already reviewed the show, we appreciate you so much. You're in this too. And I have to say a quick shout out to some people who have reviewed the show recently, and I'm really thankful for that. And that's 17 Brian, and then Ryan 123450. And apparently Ryan also has my luggage combination, so dang you, I have to change my luggage combination.
That's my garage code. You can break it any time.
Really appreciate you guys doing that for us. I also appreciate that with 30 different star ratings, we're all at 5 stars, John. And with the 21 written reviews, five stars. So when we say that this is a five-star podcast, that is because of you, the listener, making us so.
Right on. And you know what? Let me just say, as somebody that has the pleasure to occasionally appear on here, well earned, sir. This is this has earned all of those ratings through and through.
Well, I appreciate that, John. Another way that everybody can help us out is the same way that Ken Tripp does every month. And he supports us on Patreon, and he's one of my associate producers. And I really appreciate the fact that each month he helps this show keep coming to us each week. If you would like to be like Ken and choose a show that you would like to support, you would like to support the network, go to patreon.com/trekfm, and you can see the different ways that you can help Trek FM keep all of this content coming to each week. It is an expensive thing. We love doing it. This is our passion. Talking about these geek things here on the 602 Club, everything revolving around Star Trek that we do, we love bringing this content to you, and we just want to continue to be able to do that the best possible way. So help us out at patreon.com. We're a listener-supported network, so it's because of you that this happens. So check us out at patreon.com/trekfm. We've got some great perks that come with the different milestone contribution levels, whether it's being an associate producer like Ken Tripp, being able to support us at a level that would get you on the Patreon roundtables, where every month Will Wynn is hosting a special podcast for everyone that is at that level to get together and talk about something in Star Trek, just the way we do here on the shows. You get to be a part of that. It gets dropped in the master feed for everyone to listen to. I can't tell you guys how much I've enjoyed listening to that recently. We've got producer credits, exclusive content, and so much more. So check everything out at patreon.com/trekfm. Now, John, before we let you go from the 602, before you kind of stagger out of here after that an amazing interview, let everybody know about your own five-star podcast, because you have a couple, and then, of course, where to find you online if they want to hit you up and maybe talk a little more Dark Disciple or, you know, anything else that we end up talking about.
Well, I appreciate that, Matt. Yeah, there is a five-star podcast that I appear on the Trek FM network called Commentary Trek Stars, where I am the willing servant of Mike Schindler as he continually guides my Trek awakening. And I also appear on another podcast called Words with Nerds that drops every Thursday, and you can find that through iTunes, Stitcher, and all the rest. And if you want to bug me online, the best way to do it is through Twitter, and that's at Kessel Junkie, KESSELJUNKIE. And trust me, if you want to talk, that's the best way to get in touch with me.
That, and of course, everybody can find you in the Babel Conference kicking around.
Oh, yes, talking about absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Especially if somebody wants to talk trash about Mike, then I will totally jump right in there from left field and suddenly jump in.
All right, Ruby, cut him off. He's talking trash to Mike now. All right. Well, guys, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram at MRushing. You can find me doing The Orb with Christopher Jones. We talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine, the best Star Trek show out there. And, of course, if you don't believe me, just listen to the show, and Chris and I are going to do our best to convince you. We've got Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. It's so much fun. We interview authors, kind of like how we did with Christy here. Basically getting the behind-the-scenes info about writing the new Star Trek books that are coming out. And then you can also find me at my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and may the Force be with you.